Well, welcome back, everybody, and welcome to those on Zoom as well. Sound okay? Good. And sounds okay there, I saw a thumb. Good. So this morning, I know there's been a lot of words, and the Dhamma's combination of listening to the Dhamma and then practicing. So in this session on mudita, I'm going to share some words at the beginning, and then we'll have a 20-minute sit, and then there'll be some words at the end, and then a walk, just to kind of give you a heads up as to how we're going to do this. And so by now, maybe our hearts are all soft and tender, because we've been touched by the morning practices of metta and karuna, and then by the gratitude that we felt of being able to have lunch, the food itself, being able to taste it. And I hope for everyone that your lives are such that you have enough in terms of shelter and food and clothing and health care. And so we just, you know, there's a lot of gratitude. We bring that along. Just like Jerry, I loved how he added the two extra Brahma Viharas. There's six, so the forgiveness, and then, well, you said generosity. Maybe there's seven, so we'll add gratitude as another one. So just, you know, really feeling how soft and warm your heart is feeling right now, and we should be remembering that and carry this with us. I think there's a good reason why mudita is the third Brahma Vihara, especially in a day long, after we've spent some time with kindness and compassion. In Pali, mudita means to be pleased, to have a sense of gladness. And it's usually translated as sympathetic joy, to be happy for or rejoice in the happiness and good fortune of others. And while, as Jerry mentioned in his compassion talk, you know, the Buddha said, I teach two things, suffering and the end of suffering. But throughout the suttas, throughout the Dhamma, cultivating joy is an essential part of the practice. In Sharon Salzberg's book, and I left a copy out there if you want to look at it during the break, she said that the Buddha called mudita the mind deliverance of gladness because the force of happiness actually liberates us. So mudita is the rejoicing in the happiness of others, and it's a lovely aspiration. But between all of us, it ain't always easy. So in this session, I'm going to talk at the beginning about some of the things that constrict our offering of mudita, and then we'll have a stretch and our sit, and then I'll share some thoughts about the kinds of things that practices that really support mudita. And we'll have a walking session where we'll take that sense of joy along with us. So I've been on a lot of day-longs, a lot of retreats, and it has always seemed that mudita is never the focus of a Brahma Vihara retreat. It's a lot on metta, a lot on compassion, and a lot on equanimity. And Sharon Salzberg says that mudita is considered to be the most difficult of the Brahma Viharas to develop. And I think it is because sometimes we feel small and contracted, and it can be challenging to feel sympathetic joy. I think we've always all had experiences where we're feeling contracted and batted around by the eight worldly winds, maybe feeling invisible, unappreciated, seeking validation, wanting to be somebody, you know. And I remember a time my partner, when he was alive and I was struggling with some of that, he looked at me and he said, how old are you right now? And we used to do that with each other. And I said, you know, 5 or 6. And I realized that sense of being small and invisible and wanting attention, I went right back to being the youngest of three, where I was teased all the time by my older brother and sister. And that, you know, all kinds of things can trigger those old childhood memories and emotions. And then there's so many beliefs about ourselves, and so many of those emotional habits started when we were pretty young. One of them is, what do we believe about how much joy there is in the world? I listened to this talk by Sally Armstrong, she's a great teacher out of Spirit Rock. And she said, a lot of times people think of mudita as like a pie, or joy as a pie. And if Cole here gets a big slice, then there's not going to be enough left for the rest of us. And she says, that's the wrong image to have. Think of it more like this fountain. Like, you know, the fountain down at Seattle Center, that when they turn it on, it just keeps going and going and going. It's kind of infinite. But these different habits of heart and mind can really constrict our ability to feel this joy. And one of the things that in the Eightfold Path, which is the fourth of the four Noble Truths, the very first one is on wise view, when we're asked, and more than asked, we're invited and encouraged to look at these beliefs. Look at these beliefs about joy. Is there enough? Do we feel that it's scarce, or is it abundant? I recently returned from a trip to Michigan, where I grew up, and I consider that I have two kids. One I birthed, my son, and the other one, my niece, her mom, my sister, died when she was just 20, and she's now 60, and so I feel like I've been doing a lot of parenting. And they came with me, and Pete was driving, and Melissa was in the passenger seat, and I was in the back seat, and I'm just watching them banter and laugh and share, you know, favorite music or science fiction books or whatever they were doing, and I felt so much mudita coming up. You know, I was just so happy that these two cousins who have never lived in the same place are really, really, really good friends. But right in the middle of this kind of joy moment came the thought, I was feeling kind of left out. There I was in the back seat. Nobody was asking me how I thought or felt about anything. And for a moment, my joy bubble burst. Fortunately, thank goodness for the Dhamma. Thank goodness for the practice. Then I actually saw what happened, and I was able to recapture some of that mudita. But it doesn't always happen. Sometimes we get kind of stuck in that small self. And I wondered if it's ever been difficult for any of you. You know, sometimes where you want to express the joy for somebody else and you go, oh, how great. You know, but inside, not so much. And there are other barriers to mudita. And actually, Lauren mentioned them as barriers to metta. You know, envy, comparing, judging. You know, envy is not only connected to a belief about whether joy is scarce or abundant, but it often says something about ourselves and whether we believe enough in ourselves. And then there's a part of envy that is often comes out of the deluded mind. For any of you who've been on a residential meditation retreat, I think almost everybody has this experience where you're restless, you're sleepy, your mind is all over the place, and maybe you open up your eyes and you look around and everybody is just like, oh, samadhi, concentrated, calm, right? Until the retreat's over and you check it out, and people's minds were all over the place. And so often our sense of envy and that somebody else has this joy, we don't really know what's going on with them. Sharon Salzberg says that sympathetic joy is non-judgmental. It slices through our inclination to force the world that we live in to act in accordance with our views. People find happiness in all kinds of ways that I wouldn't. And sometimes, you know, I try to feel happiness for someone, and I kind of look at their lives and think, huh, maybe you shouldn't feel so happy about what's going on, you know. But that's all my own stuff. And she asks this great question in her book, Can we rejoice for people in their, as their happiness grows in whatever way it is happening? So mudita can be challenging, but I've got some really good news, because first of all, these mind states, you know, envy, there's not enough for me, all of that, those are just mind states. And any of us who've been practicing for any length of time know mind states come and go, just like the physical sensations. You know, there's that itch. It was here and then it disappeared. So they're just visitors. They're not permanent. Second, there's the heart's aspiration. It's why we're all gathered here today, is that we want to have an open heart. And so mudita is such a great practice in that it builds on that aspiration, on that softening, tenderizing of the heart, just like we did this morning. The other thing, the Brahmaviharas are so connected, just like Jerry was saying that, about how we're all in this together. And the softening of the heart, I think, comes along with that realization that everyone wants to be happy. You do, I do, your difficult person still does. I remember a wonderful talk that Jude Rosin, who teaches meditation in Olympia, she came to Sims one night and she was just coming back from retreat, and she said she finally realized that she was at least one person's difficult person, and which was such a great reminder. So, and the Venerable Anālyo says that the whole of the Buddhist path can be understood as the progression and the progressive refinement of joy. So mudita can sometimes feel like heavy lifting when we get past our little whiny self. But our whiny self isn't the only self that shows up. I have found that one of the best ways to genuinely experience and cultivate mudita is to focus on my genuine feelings of love and connection. Think about the people in my life who I really care about. And while moments of envy and small self and comparing might show up, they can take a back seat. They don't necessarily disappear, but that depth of love and caring can take the front seat. The other thing, you know, the first foundation of mindfulness is about being in the body. And when we think about how joy feels in our bodies, we know when there's something that has just changed our attitude. You woke up maybe a little bit out of sorts and something happened, a phone call, being out in the garden, the crow talked to you in the morning, whatever it is. And you feel that sense of contentment and joy in the body. And when we feel that, we can really, as we're looking at other people, know that's what they feel as well. And even sometimes if maybe the relationship somebody's telling you about isn't something that you currently have in your life, but you know how joy feels, you know how being seen feels, you know how that connection feels. So you can experience that joy for them. My father died when I was 4, so I never really knew him. And I have a lot of women friends who love telling stories about their memories of their fathers. And so even though I can't identify with any of those, I can feel into their memory and know what it feels like to be loved and taken care of and protected and feel like you're important. In a talk that Tuwari Salah, one of our guiding teachers, gave 4 years ago, she suggested that if you're in a place where you're kind of having a difficult time coming up with some joyful images, just borrow some from somebody else. And so whether it's the kittens and dogs and stuff that we've been talking about, or orcas breaching, or birds chirping, whatever it is, Or your, you know, someone else's memory that they just shared with you of a joyful time.